chicken and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripen, don't get a hard. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them is a culinary bummer. Forget about all the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a baby.
Good morning and welcome to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers and I'm here with the always fabulous Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
And we're here to talk about food and home kitchens. And this week, Thanksgiving. We're talking about Thanksgiving. Oh, you know, before we start talking about food, I just want to let people know, you and I both noticed that Senator Betsy Johnson said only one more week before the election because her show was taped a week ago.
That's what it was.
But tomorrow is actually election day, so yeah,
you don't have till next Tuesday.
You don't have till tomorrow. No, so we're just making sure that if you somehow don't know that, you know it now that you need to get busy and get your ballot in, because tomorrow is the deadline. Okay, so.
Well, we only have two shows left till Thanksgiving, and that's an important cooking holiday. So I think it's kind of funny that tomorrow is Election Day, and we're going to talk about turkey. Don't vote for a turkey.
It's totally appropriate on any election year, and maybe this one more than ever. So, and not everybody eats turkey on Thanksgiving.
No. I've had vegetarians. I've had vegans, so those are pretty interesting. It's hard to find something showy enough, you know, where you feel like it's special enough for a holiday like Thanksgiving for a vegetarian. But for me.
For you to find something like that. One of the things about being an omnivore is that you have a huge palate to be able to play with and create something. But I was thinking, when I was thinking about the show today, I was thinking about things that are, you know, we all have things that we grow up associating food-wise with whatever the occasion is.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what those might be for you.
My mom made, and using, you know, the canned soup, she made a green bean casserole that was cheesy, and it just always kind of meant
Did it have the toasty onions on top?
Yep. And then my dad made this horrible stuffing. He, for some reason, just had this lifelong love affair with organ meat. And every year it would have like more and more liver and more kidneys. And oh, it was just the worst. And so one was tasty and one was scary. How about you?
Well, we always had scalloped onions. Always, always, always. You know, the little baby pearl onions, which are a pain in the patoot to peel and prep. Or you can buy bags of them and frozen that are already peeled. But my grandmother always made scalloped onions, and she did them with that. They were classic scalloped with just the bechamel or white sauce and breadcrumbs on top. The little baby onions were blanched for a short period of time and then drained and then put in a buttered casserole dish and tossed in, you know, like blanketed with bechamel and topped with like garlic breadcrumbs and put in the oven until they were all toasty and bubbly. And they're really, really, really good. And the sweet comes out of the onion.
See, that's so funny because we never had those. We never had creamed onions. And I was reading an article recently on the New York Times website. And it was talking about things, you know, planning your Thanksgiving. And they said you have to have creamed onions. And I thought, well, that's different. And sometimes there's a bunch of us who will get together for Thanksgiving. And then Kathleen McCormick always brings creamed onions, and they're delicious, but I just thought it was like something she made up or something. Do you know what I mean? Or just something she really liked to bring, but I didn't know that it was a traditional.
It could be a tradition
thing.
I wonder if, well, a lot of things are regional, and
yeah,
you know,
because the Times was like, well, you can't have Thanksgiving without them. I'm like, brr, you know, really not green jello fluff. Isn't that what you can't live without?
What about ambrosia?
Well,
you know, in the intervening years, I have done them a variety of different ways with because I am loathe to deal with the little pearl onions.
Well, they're such a pain
to
peel.
They are. Yeah. So I have done them with just sliced onions and then added leeks and or shallots and caramelized those and added a little grated cheese of some
sort.
See,
to me, the flavor of those three sound better than the flavor of the pearl onions.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I really like the combination of a whole bunch of kinds of oniony sorts of things. A little garlic in there doesn't hurt either. But in terms of just what, you know, you grew up with that you loved and why, as a little kid, I would choose to love the creamed onions. I'm not sure, but mostly because they were just fabulously delicious. And it was the one thing besides mincemeat pie. And, you know, in the intervening years, because I do not do homemade mincemeat.
Okay.
And when you look up recipes of mincemeat pie, you know, I do the Eat Your Books app. It's a free app. Go for it, you guys. You can put all your cookbooks in there really easily, and then you just type in your ingredient or whatever, and it tells you which one of your cookbooks it's in. When I look at all of the options for mincemeat, none of them actually have meat in them anymore.
Oh, see, because I thought that's what you were doing, because I remember in my family just this gruesome, I mean gruesome pie. It was a greasy...
You have to eat it warm.
No, you don't.
No, you have to, because suet is an ingredient.
Yeah.
And my grandmother used to make mincemeat, which I loved as a child, and I still do. But I don't like mincemeat if it doesn't have meat.
Okay.
But it always had raisins that had been generously soaked in brandy.
Yeah.
And grated apple. And ginger and all this. It was very savory in the way that chutneys tend to be savory, but it also had minced meat, either beef or venison, most often venison, and a little suet, because venison is very lean.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really good.
Okay.
And she was making, of course, pie crust with lard, so really good pie crust.
Yeah.
And we always ate it warm. And I don't think that mincemeat with suet in it. I think it's not mincemeat if it doesn't have suet in
it. It's because now they're mostly just dried fruit pies.
And they shouldn't be called mincemeat.
Yeah.
Implies two things, minced and meat.
Yes, yes.
So don't tell me that your shredded apple pie with a few raisins and some brandy is mincemeat. But anyway, I loved that as a kid. I loved it. We always had a pumpkin pie and a mince pie, and we got it warm with a little homemade ice cream on it.
Do you know Amy Bugbee? She has that vanilla company. She's created this holiday that's around her husband's birthday, and she calls it the 9 days of pie. And I think in the past, she would make like a pie a day, which was nine pies, which is really something. But this year, my gosh, I mean, I think across the whole holidays, I bet she's making 60 pies. And so she's making a real mincemeat with real meat.
Ooh.
And she says that the filling takes 4 days. Because she had it all mixed up, and then it had to like,
yes,
she had to do things to it for 4 days, and she's made some pretty impressive, pretty just really unusual pies. Grape pies made out. I think she had three different grape pies made out of different kinds of grapes, and just really, really interesting. If you are interested in pie, follow her Facebook, because wow, what she does is amazing.
Wow. And she's making her own mincemeat. See, that's where that's where I stop and don't make mincemeat pie, because I don't make my own mincemeat.
It's
remember this as a kid. And my grandmother used to put it up and can it like you would can tuna or anything.
Yep.
And so then when you wanted to make a pie, you just went in the root cellar and grabbed a jar of mincemeat.
And it was all soaked, which is what Amy's doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a while to come to its senses.
Come to its senses.
Anyway, mincemeat pie and creamed onions.
Yeah.
That's it. But always, I guess I grew up, we always had turkey.
Yeah.
But I've been to other people's houses who have other kinds of main, you know, the main attraction, not necessarily turkey.
My friend Georgia usually has a big Thanksgiving, a lot of us do. And she does this thing that I think is just genius. She cooks the turkey the day before. And she has two. She cooks two big turkeys because that's what she needs. So she cooks the turkey the day before, and then she bones it. She gets it off the bone, and then she serves it in a big hotel pan, you know, because she does her her Christmas, or her rather her Thanksgiving, sorry, buffet style, sets it out on the island, and people scoop it up what they want. But she just has it in turkey stock, turkey broth. That's what she does. And it's delicious because it's sitting in broth. It's very moist.
Uh-huh.
And then she doesn't have to, she has two ovens, but she doesn't have to deal with the turkey the day of the party. And I think that's kind of genius. And it got me thinking about what you can do ahead. And that's always a thing that I really, I try really hard at Thanksgiving, is to do things ahead so that I'm not completely frazzled the day of, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, talking about Amy and her pies, pies freeze. Do yourself a favor. Like just think about your future self and love your future self and make a pie now and stick it in the freezer. So all you have to do is morning of Thanksgiving is just take it out, take the plastic and tin foil off of it and put it on a cooling rack so that the bottom defrosts too. And then you don't have to think about it. And it works really well. Pie crust, if you thawed in the open air, actually thaws really well. And just, you know, all baked and everything. You can freeze them not baked too, but then you got to have it in your oven.
Yeah.
And,
But that's an easy way. If what you want is warm pie for dessert, you can take your unbaked pie out of the freezer and just, it can be baking away while everybody's having dinner.
You know, that's true. Yeah, just
so
pop it in the
you
oven.
You could have warm pie. Have you ever frozen pumpkin pie? Because I don't think custard pies, I haven't had good luck.
For me, it freezes fine. And
really?
Also,
okay.
Also, I was reading last night, because I always thought it would be a problem if you froze it before you baked it.
Uh-huh.
But that's what they were saying on that, in that article in the Times I was reading, to freeze it raw. So to freeze the custard raw, like put it in the pie pan with the raw crust and then take it out and bake it. But yeah, I've frozen it. Have you and not had luck, I wonder? Or did you like hear mumblings in the offing?
No, I haven't actually tried a frozen pumpkin pie, but I tried a frozen custard pie, which just pumpkin pie is just a kind of custard, right?
Yeah.
And it was kind of watery when...
And straight custard I could see just because it's so much like egg to...
Yeah, it's really a lot of liquid, not
But no, I mean, I swear, the sweet potato pie is so similar, and pumpkin pies, I've frozen them baked and they turn out perfect. And the pie on earth that freezes the absolute best is pecan pie. It's almost better when you freeze it and thaw it. That's a really good one.
I have a truly fantastic recipe for Alsatian pecan pie that I got out of the Austin American Statesman when I lived in Texas.
What do you think makes it Alsatian?
Cream.
Ooh.
And I mean, a lot of pecan pies have booze in them. This has brandy, peach brandy specifically.
Really?
But I think it's the cream. The cream is the only ingredient on there that I don't see in every single pecan pie recipe.
Yeah.
But it makes just a really rich and creamy and fabulous.
So it's not so gelatinous like regular.
Right.
I can't think of a better word.
That's right.
Okay.
It is.
That sounds like it would be an improvement.
It's fabulous. And I believe that recipe is on our website. And I want to remind everybody right now that northcoastfoodweb.org is the place to get recipes. You sent some great recipes via email, and I know those are going to go up on the website tomorrow. So if you're looking for things we've talked about and many other things, the Food Web and Coast Community Radio are the producers of this particular show, and we do the recipes on the Food Web website. So northcoastfoodweb.org. And I want to remind you that Coast Community Radio is, in fact, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon, streaming live at coastradio.org and on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. So, Linda, you sent some recipes via email. Are these things that you might be going to do for Thanksgiving? Or
well, I always do that wild rice salad, and I talked about that a while ago. So, but I hadn't sent the recipe yet, so I did that. And then there's a sweet potato recipe that I love, where you just cube up sweet potatoes, and I mean those orange yams,
yeah,
not the sweet potatoes that are too hard to cut. Ooh,
they are really hard. I know. You need a great
knife.
I'm
sure it would work with those, but I always use the yams that we call sweet potatoes, and then just a little bit of olive oil and some pepper, and I roast them till they get the little, you know, brown edges on them that are so tasty. And then I make some brown butter with sage and cinnamon and maple butter, and it's just, or maple syrup, and it's just really, really good. It's really, really, really good. It's really autumnal, and that's something that I always have for...
And herby, not so sweet.
Yeah.
So talk about brown butter a little bit.
Okay. I wonder if you all know how to brown butter, because if you don't, it's such a good thing to know how to do because it's so tasty. So what you do is in a little saucepan, or some kind of pan, but I like to use a light bottom pan because I like to see the butter get brown, and you can tell when it's good and brown and it's not black, because if it's black, it's burnt. So you put, like, say you put a stick of butter in the pan, and then you melt it, and then it'll start sizzling because it's hot, and then it'll quit sizzling, and then it'll start foaming, and it's quiet. And when it's quiet and it's quit sizzling, you know you're getting pretty close. So you swirl it so that you can see through the foam to the brown part. The milk solids get brown. And this is one of the things in cooking where you have to be brave. Be brave, my little cooks. But you just have to swirl it around until it's brown, and maybe it'll take, do you think, a minute?
You may, maybe, but I think also it depends on your stove, because if it's electric or gas or whatever, you just really have to be vigilant, but not for very long.
Don't leave. And then you have brown butter. And then when it's brown, whatever you have to do to it, you know, sometimes we just pour it on macaroni. Woohoo! but it's really, really good. And then this, you would add, you know, the sage and the syrup and the cinnamon and maple syrup. And then just mix it around and then pour it on the sweet potatoes, and woohoo, you've got a dish. But it is really delicious.
Oh, yum.
Very, very. And I'm not a big fan of the marshmallows. So many people are.
Yeah.
But it's just an alternate to the marshmallow. Yeah. Just a little bit sweet, but not marshmallow sweet.
The thing about the orange sweet potatoes that we call yams.
Yeah.
Is that they are really high in sugar on their, all by them, their own selves.
Yeah.
So when we add brown sugar and marshmallows to them, it's dessert.
For me, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. It's really desserty. Yeah. But it is absolutely like green bean casserole.
Yeah.
One of those things that for very many people, it's not Thanksgiving without that.
Yeah.
So, I totally get it. And I don't know that it's necessarily Thanksgiving for me without sweet potatoes of some kind. I like them just even roasted.
Mm-hmm. And mashed.
Oh,
if you're not going to have mashed potatoes. But how can you not have mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, because how can you not have gravy? Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's all about the gravy as far as I'm concerned.
So mashed potatoes. Oh, speaking of mashed potatoes, that was my segue. this is something I've learned that I think really helps me with not getting overwhelmed at the last minute at Thanksgiving. And that is, if you... whatever you're going to do, cook the potatoes in the oven, boil them, whatever you're going to do, and then make your mashed potatoes. If you make them in a pot, like some kind of pot that has a cover, and then take, I mean, I'm talking like 4 bath towels. You take that pot that you cooked them in, and the pot is hot, and the potatoes are very hot, and they're mashed, and they're ready to go. And then you wrap that pot with, you know, the lid on it in like 4 bath towels. I mean, a lot of bath towels. And that sounds excessive, but just put it someplace. It'll stay hot for 2 hours. And so that's a way, you know, you can break out crock pots to keep things warm and stuff like that. But it's just a really easy way to keep the potatoes. And nobody ever believes me, but when they try it, they're like, I can't believe it worked. And it really, really does. But just make sure you have at least 4 bath towels around
there. All right. Because you want that butter to melt when it hits the potatoes, you know, when you put it on your plate.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You want them still hot. And it works. Yeah.
Wow. I love George's idea of cooking the turkey ahead of time for 2 reasons.
Yeah.
Not only do you not have to roast the turkey, and then if you want to do other things with your oven, there it is.
Yeah.
Because we don't all have 2 ovens.
Yeah.
But do you have 2 ovens?
I do.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, I am too.
Oh, sorry.
But also, the thing about big feast meals
mm-hmm.
is that a lot of the work happens after it's all over and you have had it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of getting the turkey off the carcass and dealing with the mm-hmm. carcass and all of that stuff ahead of time so you don't have to look at it after dinner when everybody's gone and there you are with a mm-hmm. kitchen full of dishes. And
yeah, or you could have everybody help, but they're drunk and they're going to break everything, you know.
they're not allowed to help, really. Really.
Yeah.
You go sit over there.
Oh, that's on fire. This is relaxing.
Did you? Now, you sent three recipes.
Oh, the other one was a tomato soup recipe that I meant to send a month ago. I'm sorry, and I just forgot.
Hey, it's
somebody
soup
was
season.
Bugging me on the street about it, so I'm like, oh, okay. you know, we were talking about Georgia making that turkey early. Another thing is then she's got that turkey carcass. You know, she makes her turkeys real early the day before. She's got the turkey carcass. She boils it. She gets her stock, and she makes gravy. You can make gravy ahead of time. You know
Ooh,
that when you have Thanksgiving yeah. leftovers and you heat up that gravy, it is just fine. It is not like worse for the
fabulous.
Wear of sitting in
no.
the refrigerator over.
You cannot taste the age of the gravy.
No, exactly. So she's got her gravy made. She's, you know, got her stock made and she's got her turkey made. And that's a big thing, you know.
Yeah, so, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
I like the whole idea of it. I got to say, I was sidetracked on the creamed onions and mincemeat pie, but gravy, it's all about the gravy.
Yeah.
Gravy is one of those things that I rarely ever eat under any other circumstances, but man,
yeah.
turkey, roast turkey gravy.
How do you make yours?
Just skim the fat off the drippings and use the roasting pan, set it on a burner, make a little roux with some flour and, you know, whisk that for a few minutes until the flour doesn't seem like flour anymore. So you get that nice pasty thing. And then I use more stock than milk, but I do use some milk or cream
okay.
to make it a little bit richer.
Mm-hmm.
And then just get it to the, whisk it around until it's the consistency that I like
mm-hmm.
and season it.
Usually always needs a lot of pepper.
Yep.
For some reason, gravy needs pepper.
But, you know, if it's coming right off of the turkey, if you're not using stock in a box,
mm-hmm.
if you're using turkey stock that's in your roaster pan, it's got all of that sage and whatever else you
yeah. –
it's got a lot of stuff in it. So it behooves you to make the gravy and then taste it and then figure out what you feel like it needs. But it's just satiny and gorgeous and
yeah. – I started cutting my turkey breast different.
Yeah.
And I like it. So sometimes if I'm feeling like, you know, super fancy, I'll cram a bunch of herbs underneath the skin.
Uh-huh.
You know, not whole herbs, but I'll just the leaves, you know. Because
uh-huh.
a lot of times if I'm making something, I'll just throw sticks of thyme in there, but I won't do that under the skin. So I'll make a paste out of butter and herbs, and then probably some shallots and salt and pepper, and I'll fresh herbs, you know, just like the parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Yes.
And I'll shove it under the skin of both breasts so that it bakes in there, and I think it roasts in there, and I think it's beautiful. So then let's see if I can describe this. So you know that if you were to dissect the turkey, and that doesn't sound delicious, but if you were to roast the turkey and then dissect the breast off of there, you know what it would look like, and it would be longer one way. So let's pretend that we have a banana, and that's our – this is so lame. Let's pretend we have a banana, and that's our turkey breast. You know how you cut a banana.
And little coins.
Yeah, and normally we cut the turkey breast as if we were slicing the banana the long way.
Right.
And so I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about taking that turkey breast off, putting it on a board, and then cutting it into shorter pieces, like how you would cut a banana. And then each piece, because you're cutting straight down on the board, each piece has a little bit of skin. Each piece has a little line of herbs, and then the turkey. And it's really beautiful that way.
It is. I love cutting chicken breasts and turkey breasts that way. And they don't, they hold on to their juice. They're not
yeah.
so thin.
Yeah.
They don't dry out. And especially if you have some leftovers, when did that ever happen with turkey breasts? But anyway, sometimes
yeah.
They stay nice.
Okay.
You know, they're great the next day. You can still use them in a sandwich or something.
Yeah. And you're not cutting the other way. You're cutting like with the grain so that you've got these
yeah.
big stringy bleh pieces.
Yeah.
And I really like this way better.
I think so too. And I think it's more tender somehow. I don't
Probably
know.
Probably because you don't have to like, you know,
yeah.
rip on those big strings.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there's some science about the way that you cut certain kinds of meats to make them more tender, mm-hmm. just by the way you cut them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one is in terms of poultry breasts. I think that's
have you true. Have you ever smoked a turkey?
No.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, but I like it. My friend Jerry does all the time. And I think about like going to, you know, the Renaissance Fair, you know, when I was a kid in Minnesota, and they had those smoked turkey legs. And they were just delicious. I don't think I would ever try to deep fry one. I think it's just too dangerous. It doesn't appeal to me, that whole like.
And it's really a lot of oil.
Yeah. Yeah. What a waste.
It seems like to me. But and also I have had deep fried turkey before. I know people who swear by it. But I don't think that it is like astoundingly better than roast turkey.
The tiny amount of benefit isn't worth the 8 gallons of oil plus the risk of losing your house.
No. Plus what do you get? Plus the cleanup. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I will go way out of my way not to deep fry anything, let alone a 25 pound bird. Yeah. No, thank you. But no offense to folks who are getting out their turkey fryers, even as we speak.
Upping their insurance coverage.
I know folks who do it every year and do it very successfully, and I have never had a mishap, but it's scary to me.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would like to try the smoking, I think. I don't know.
You need...
Probably not this year.
My smoker would not hold... it would hold some pieces of turkey, but it wouldn't. It's not big enough for a whole turkey. I don't know. Maybe you take a turkey apart to smoke it. What I know about smoking a turkey would fit on the head of a pin.
Ditto.
Seriously.
I'm there. We're on the same pin. Hey, you know what? Let's have a cooking show and talk about stuff we don't know.
Let's talk about stuff and that we don't like.
Yeah.
Excellent. Next time. I do want to let everybody know that next time, next time being the 21st, which is just scant 3 days before before Thanksgiving. Sorry. Mm-hmm. That was a Freudian slip. Anyway, we're going to talk about what to do with leftovers and so if you have ideas and or questions about leftovers from any kind of a big feast day, you can send them. Go to the website, northcoastfoodweb.org, and send us an email. And we will try to address them or include your tips if you have any. You know, I get to participate, and I think that I'm going to see you there in a big kind of extended family holiday celebration. Mm-hmm. On Thanksgiving, and it's really always
so fun.
So fun and
so delicious.
So delicious. Yeah. And my favorite way to celebrate a big holiday like that. But when that is not an option for my husband and I, then there's just two of us. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not cooking a turkey. You know what I mean?
Really?
No.
Oh.
I'm roasting a chicken.
Okay.
And it's the same thing. You know, you can still make stuffing and everything. It's just that you're not dealing with it forever. But it is a more modest proposal because if you want to roast anything else, like your veg or whatever, you have room. If you, like me, have one oven, you can do a chicken and several other things.
And you can do a chicken. You can just do a turkey breast, too. You know,
yes.
You can buy those.
That's right. Yeah. And I always do the herbs and butter under the skin. And even
it's
on
really
the
delicious.
Drumsticks, it's so good. And
special.
We're not supposed to eat the skin, but, man, it's really good when it's had butter and herbs underneath it and it's all crispy and everything. Hey, we have a couple minutes left, so talk to me about cranberries, because there's only about a million ways you do it.
Okay, I do it real simple. I just put them on the stove with some orange juice and some sugar, and I boil them until they start to pop. But this year I found something that's different. I was actually using it as a cake decoration, and it is candied fresh cranberries. Now, you'd think that a fresh cranberry would not be a happy, pleasant thing to eat, but even the husband likes them, and that's like the test. So what you do is you take some cranberries, and then you take an egg white and you whip it with a fork so that it's kind of frothy. Uh-huh. And you're just trying to break up all those snotty albumin proteins. Can't talk. So then You take a very small amount, and I'm thinking like just take a little bowl full of cranberries, and then I'm talking like maybe a quarter teaspoon, maybe a little more. I don't think it's a teaspoon. And you put a little tiny bit of egg white in there, and you just roll those cranberries around until they get the ever so slightest sheen of egg white on them. You don't want them all gloppy. You don't want them to look like they've been totally oiled and thick like that, just a sheen. And then you roll them in sugar, and they're just delicious. They're crunchy, and they're sweet, and they're tart. And so I think that I'm going to put that as just a little, you know, decoration around the cranberry sauce this year.
Oh, that sounds really good. And that's how you candy, like, flower blossoms.
Yeah, and you know, they always tell you to use super fine sugar, but it doesn't matter. Just use granulated sugar. You know, it's prettier if you use super fine sugar, but we just don't really have that easily in Astoria, so.
No, that's really true.
Yeah.
Oh, yum. I'm going to try it.
It's really good. And then I thought I might, but I haven't tried it yet, maybe put a little citric acid in there so that they would taste kind of like sweet tarts. But that's just something for something else on another day, sugar and a little bit of citric acid.
Well, and or even just a little tiny drop of orange juice, because orange and cranberry are so good together.
Yeah. And I do use that in my sauce. How do you make your sauce?
I just like whole cranberry sauce also.
Yeah.
And some kind of citrus, whatever I've got, sugar, fresh cranberries. We are really lucky.
Boy, we are, for the cranberries.
Yep.
Oh, they're like nothing. They practically pay you to take them. Gosh. And they're so perfect.
Hey, we're out of time.
Aww.
Linda Perkins, thank you so much. I know. Thank you. I'm going to see you again on the 21st. We're going to talk about leftovers.
Yay.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
It is 10 o'clock straight up on Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon, streaming live at coastradio.org and on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. Stay tuned for NPR News headlines, and then John Stevenson is here to bring you Lost Highways.